And we have a public hearing on several Senate bills. The first one is Senate Bill 70. Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 70 makes a person ineligible for driving privileges if that person is affected by mental or physical condition or impairment that affects the person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. It standardizes medical language related to driving privileges. This bill has no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact. The Senate floor vote, as you'll see on there, was 24-1.
Great. Thank you. Robin, you tell me you're the only one signed up on almost all of these today.
The Freeman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Department of Transportation requested this bill to address inconsistencies in the statutes directing Oregon's driver medical program. Senate Bill 70 standardizes the medical language relating to driving privileges to ensure consistency with the mandatory medical reporting statutes. This bill will make medical-related license eligibility standards consistent with the requirements of the mandatory medical reporting statute, which states that determinations about a person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle cannot be based solely on the diagnosis of a medical condition, cognitive or functional impairment, but must be based on the actual effect of that condition or impairment on the person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. DMV recognizes that some individuals have or may develop medical conditions or impairments that impact their ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. DMV's medical program identifies these individuals through mandatory reporting of severe and uncontrollable impairments by medical providers, voluntary reporting of physical or mental conditions by law enforcement, family, courts, medical providers, and others, self-reporting of medical issues on DMV's license application forms, and DMV vision screening. Requirements for medical eligibility for driving privileges and mandatory reporting by medical providers are addressed in statute. For many years, Oregon law required mandatory reporting by physicians of individuals with medical conditions which bring about momentary or prolonged lapses of consciousness or control. These individuals were ineligible for driving privileges under Oregon law. House Bill 3071, passed by the Oregon Legislature in 2001, redefined medical issues that must be reported. The law mandates that medical providers report individuals with functional and/or cognitive impairments that are severe and uncontrollable, and as such, are likely to render individuals unsafe to operate motor vehicles. This law, effective statewide on June 1, 2004, replaced the previous law requiring the reporting of conditions which bring about momentary or prolonged lapses of consciousness or control. While medical providers are now required to report severe and uncontrollable impairments, the statutes granting driving privileges were not revised to reflect this change. The medical language related to driver license eligibility in these statutes still refers to conditions which bring about lapses of consciousness or control and inconsistently use terminology such as disability and disease. Senate Bill 70 will resolve the inconsistency in medical language between the mandatory reporting and driving privileges statutes. References to conditions which bring about lapses of consciousness or control and disability and disease will be removed. This language will be replaced with the terminology mental or physical condition or impairment that affects the person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. This change in language will standardize terminology and aid the department's creation of a seamless medical program for determining a driver's eligibility based on the same criterion of impairments as those used in the mandatory medical reporting statute. Current statutory requirements do not take into consideration that a condition or disease may be under control or in remission. Senate Bill 70 ensures that the medical language used in statutes relating to driving privileges is standardized and consistent with the mandatory medical reporting statute. And I ask the committee to support Senate Bill 70. With my testimony, I have included a copy of our driver's license identification card application form. And And the easiest way, really, to explain this change in statute is to look at this form. And in the middle of the form, in the left-hand margin, there's a very badly drawn star. But that draws your attention to two questions that today you're asked to answer. And what you're asked to answer is, have you had a loss of consciousness or physical control, or has your ability to drive been impaired within the last 2 years? If you answer yes, then you have to identify a disease or an explanation. And with this, your driving eligibility is then based on a disease, not on the condition that that disease has on your driving, if there is any impairment that causes that to affect your driving ability. That's the easiest way for me to explain this to you. And I'd be happy to answer questions.
Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So would serving in the legislature satisfy as another reason?
Absolutely.
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, that's beyond my scope of expertise to answer. I'm sorry.
Any further questions for Robin? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Is this mostly self-reporting? Is self-reported, and that's how you determine it? I just want clarification on how the department actually determines whether a person suffers from any of these ailments.
Chair Gilman, Representative Thatcher, what happens is you come in and you are, for the portion of statute that we're dealing with today with this bill, it is the form, and people are actually very honest. So if there is an issue, that's the first step in us determining whether or not you're able to be either issued an initial driver's license or a renewal. And from there, depending on the information that you give us, it would actually go to your doctor, to your physician, to determine whether or not you had an issue that we should consider further, and that would go to the state.
Further questions?
Yes, Representative Hunt. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on Representative Patrick's question, isn't in the other way you become aware of, I assume this would fall into the other pieces of statute. The other way you become aware is if a physician who believes that your ability to drive is impaired in this way is mandated to report that to DMV, correct?
Chair Gilman, Representative Hunt, yes.
Yes.
And a follow-up to Representative Hunt's question is, what if they don't? What if a physician who's treating a person for maybe diabetes or something knows the person has vision issues and doesn't report? What happens?
Chair Gillen, Representative Boone, they're mandated to report, and I'm not sure what those consequences are if they don't. I can follow up and find out for you.
And I have one follow-up. On a vision, when you renew your license and they say a vision test is required at DMV, what if you just have a vision exam from an ophthalmologist? Can you take in a report from that?
Representative Gilman, Representative Boone, I believe that starting at age 50, it's mandatory that you have a vision test when you renew your license. With this area of statute, if you come in and it's determined through your reporting, self-reporting, that you have a vision issue, you would be required to go back to your physician. He would fill out a form that DMV would provide, and if he could use the physical exam that he had just performed for you to determine that their vision was fine, he could use that, but if not, he would be required to conduct a physical examination.
But they just automatically require over 50 the vision exam?
Yes.
Okay. Further questions? Thanks, Robin. Anyone else testify on Senate Bill 70? Closed public hearing on 70 and on the work session on 70.
Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure?
I move Senate Bill 70 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bruin.
And can I make a comment? Or is this not the right place?
Absolutely. Just as soon as I get through restating that, we'll do that. Representative Bruin moves Senate Bill 70 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I live this experience firsthand. receive my driving, now many years ago, of course, but receive my driving permit like most good red-blooded Oregonians did when they were 15, and was very excited about that and very diligent. And between the time that I turned 15 and the time that I turned 16, which was the time to get the driver's license, I acquired insulin-dependent diabetes. And so I went in to the DMV, being an honest kid, and it asked me, and I think it looked different than this back then, because I don't think it asked the question, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I don't think it asked the question, have you ever had an incident which could affect you? It merely said, do you have one of these conditions? And I, not wanting to not tell the truth, I said yes. Not knowing what the, well, I would have said yes anyways, but not knowing what the fallout from that is. Well, here I was on my 16th birthday, eager to get a driver's license, and that's probably not the most important thing in the world, but it's pretty important to a 16-year-old kid. And I went through the bureaucratic maze for about 2.5 months to get it sorted out after I went back up to the counter, handed them this, and said, well, sorry, you know, Mr. Bruin or Master Bruin, whatever it was. So as somebody who's and my point at the time and my point now is, in talking to Robin about this, yeah, there's occasions where somebody like me who has insulin treated diabetes shouldn't be driving. There's no question about it. But it needs to be on a case-by-case basis. To have it be a macro policy and sort of be guilty by association is not what we should be doing on these driver's licenses. So I'm a very strong supporter of Senate Bill 70.
Thank you, Representative. I think at 16, my driver's license was the most important thing. I don't think there's any question about that. Matter of fact, I think I got two moving violations before I was 16. So it was really important.
Is that on the tractor?
On the tractor. We'll go with the tractor. Oh, dear, now we've almost forgotten where we were.
You were a piece of work when you were 16.
Additional comments. All right, Mike, call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Motion carries. You want to carry that?
You do.
Okay, we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 72. And Patrick, give us a little rundown.
I'm glad to hear. Senate Bill 72 requires the Department of Transportation to establish protective headgear standards and specifications that conform with national standards and specifications. No revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact on the bill, and the Senate floor vote was 22-6 on this measure. As noted on your staff measures.
Troy, you want to come talk to us about this?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Probably want to talk about this instead of moving violations before 16. Would be that. Senate Bill 72 is pre-filed by the department, and it actually is joint to a bill that we had before this chamber last session, where for the Highway Safety Office, there's a lot of things that were in statute that relate to particular bodies that do testing standards on equipment, headlights, and things like that. Last session, a bill was passed to require helmets for skateboarders and scooters under the age of 16. And in that particular area of statute, it talks about a particular body that sets standards for helmets. However, there's a difference between a bicycle helmet and a skateboard scooter helmet. A bicycle helmet is called front-loaded. The front of the helmet, because that's where most bicyclists, when they fall, they're going forward, so it's loaded for a frontal impact. A skateboard or a scooter helmet is back-loaded, because when they fall, it's usually towards the back. And there's different standards and different people, different organizations that set the standards. This bill is asking to give the permission to ODOT, the Safety Division, to abide by whatever national body there is based on whatever particular helmet or particular use there is, so that we don't end up having people inadvertently buying helmets that are incorrect for that particular use. And there were no questions before the Senate committee in relationship to what this meant. I do have some information as far as what the trauma system has seen as far as injuries with helmet or no helmet, and it's the severity without a helmet is much higher than with a helmet. And as again, 15 and under, it is the law in Oregon from last session. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be more happy to try and answer any of your questions.
Questions? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Are there any helmets being manufactured now that don't meet these standards?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thatcher, there are helmets that people can buy that are toys. They are not; they have not been crash tested for a frontal impact or rear head impact that you can buy for $5 or $6, but they aren't. They are not tested nor meet certification.
Oh, sure.
Well, first thing when you said toys, I was thinking of the little construction gear thing that my son likes to play with. It has a little bump cap on. I mean, do they look like toys, like that, or they come off as being the real deal?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thatcher, there are both. There are kinds that are just a plastic shell that have no inner lining and may have a chin strap that buttons instead of buckles and things like that. And there are some that look quite real but are not crash tested. And one of the concerns is if you ever get into a situation where someone's hurt, child is hurt because they're wearing the wrong one, you or I as a parent to be able to go back. If in law we've said there's a company out there or there's a sticker that someone can put on it, and we have policy have inadvertently said that helmet's okay for scooters and skaters when it really should be for bicycles, there's nothing for you or I as parents to go back and deal with the people, the manufacturers or the testers. What this will do is allow us in rule to make sure they're lined up right, just in case there ever is a question and someone needs the support of law because of an incorrect sale or an incorrect device.
Further questions? Yes,
Mr. Chair. If there were 6 dissenting votes in the Senate, can you give us any indication why that was the case?
Mr. Chair and Representative Burley, I can only guess. And a couple questions came up in relationship to just the whole issue of helmets for scooters and skaters. But that was a bill from last session. But that's the only type of conversation I heard at all in relationship to the Senate floor as to why there were no votes.
In the Senate committee hearings, was there any testimony in opposition?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, no, there was not.
Why is SNEL and ANSI and the U.S. Department of Transportation no longer in the business of setting such standards?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, some of the individuals that are there, SNEL, for instance, has to deal with a particular set of helmet, but not all, and they will test certain ones or not. USDOT has part of the program in relationship to, like, motorcycle helmets. That's the DOT sticker that you hear talked about as far as being on the helmet. ANSI, is my understanding, they don't do any testing at all of devices. They just set the regulations and the referrals. And there are other groups that have been deferred as to where helmet standards come from.
Further questions?
In your written testimony, you said that the agencies listed in the statute currently, which are the 3 that I had read, are no longer the agencies that set standards for this type of headgear. So do they still set them but just for certain types of headgear, or are they just absolutely out of the business completely of doing that?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, USDOT and ANSI will not have anything to do with bicycle, scooter, skater-type helmets. SNEL does have some in relationship to bicycle, but not for scooter, skater. And there are other organizations, and I don't have the names of those with me. That was my fault. I should have put that in the file, but I don't know which organizations for scooter and skater that we're worrying about. That's part of what we would make sure we cover when we do the rule publication.
Okay, so this last question, I promise. Thank you. This
right.
is not an issue of liability. In other words, if ODOT by rule sets these standards, even though you claim, you know, you'd say, well, we follow national standards, is there a potential liability issue to the state?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I would say the liability is in the way it's written today, because we are instructing parents or grandparents, whoever is buying the helmets, by these 3 organizations, which is mentioned only 2, they're buying the incorrect helmet for the scooters and skaters, because the only one in there that's liable or that is connected is SNEL, and that's just for bicycle. And so I think today's statute puts us more at fault, because we're telling parents to go buy, you know, technically go buy the wrong helmet. And tickets are going to be more on the fact they're not using them, or they're, you know, very clearly misusing them by not having them strapped on and things like that, than having the wrong one.
Thank you.
Further questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else testify on Senate Bill 72? Close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 72.
Mr. Chair, I will move Senate Bill 72 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Beyer moves 72 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Mike.
Representative
Boone?
Aye.
Representative Bruin?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Zomen?
Aye.
Carries. Do you mind carrying it? I put it on the consent calendar, but with those six no votes on the Senate side, I think we better try to explain a little bit. Representative Beyer will be carrying the bill. Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 73.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 73 waives the reinstatement fee for suspended driving privileges in cases when the Department of Transportation determines that the person was in compliance with the requirement of the court prior to the effective date of the suspension. There's an emergency clause in this bill, and so it would take effect upon its passage and signature by the governor. 28-0 in the Senate.
Robin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Robin Freeman, Oregon Department of Transportation. The Department of Transportation requested this bill to expand their authority to waive the reinstatement fee when a person's driving privileges have been suspended. This change will improve program consistency in situations where a person has complied with the law and should not be required to pay the $75 reinstatement fee. Senate Bill 73 expands the authority of the department to waive the reinstatement fee to include a court-related suspension if the department determines that the person complied with court requirements prior to the effective date of the suspension. There are provisions in current statute that allow the department to waive the reinstatement fee when a person's driving privileges are suspended as a result of an error committed by an insurance company or if the department commits an error in issuing a suspension. This bill addresses a similar situation. When a person complies with the court's requirements, the court informs the individual that DMV will be notified so that the suspension will not go into effect. However, in some cases, DMV does not receive the compliance notice from the court prior to the effective date of the suspension. Once DMV receives the compliance notice, DMV can rescind the suspension but does not have the statutory authority to waive the reinstatement fee, even at the request of the court. The department's authority to waive reinstatement fees is set in statute. This bill would remedy a situation which annually impacts approximately 200 citizens. I would ask the committee to support Senate Bill 73. It positively impacts citizens by allowing the department to waive the $75 reinstatement fee. Thank you. I'll take questions.
Thank you, Ron. Questions? No? Fine. This may go really fast. He'll be back. I think. Anyone else to testify on 73? Close the public hearing and open a work session on 73.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we forward Senate Bill 73 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hunt moves Senate Bill 73 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Mike.
Representative Bruin?
Aye.
Representative
Early?
Yes.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Chair Gelman?
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Consent on that.
That was my motion.
Perfect. Representative Hunt moves that we place 73 on the consent calendar. Any discussion?
Consent calendar.
Any objection? Can't talk today. Other than that, it's off just one. Open the public hearing on 74. Patrick?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 74 allows the Department of Transportation to determine by rule when to issue replacement driver's licenses, permit, or identification card that has this different distinguishing number from the license, permit, or card that's being replaced. This bill has no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact. The Senate vote was 28-0, and I need to point out, Mr. Chair, we heard from Legislative Council right around noontime that there is a conflict with this bill. The bill that conflicts with this House Bill 2106, which I believe this committee acted on previously. That bill has already moved through both chambers, and as a result, the Legislative Council Office will be drafting conflict amendments should the committee decide to go forward with this bill, but they will not be ready for this meeting.
Robin?
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. Robin Freeman, Oregon Department of Transportation. Oregon law allows DMV to assign a new driver license number only in situations where a police agency provides the customer with a report stating the person's name or lost driver's license is being used fraudulently. However, the requirement of providing a police report to DMV regarding the fraudulent use is often a hindrance to the customer and DMV in dealing effectively with the fraud. The person may have discovered the fraud by receiving a call from a collection agency or being denied credit. The person then works with the financial institutions, credit card companies, and perhaps the Social Security Administration to resolve the situation. But today, the person cannot present this information directly to DMV and obtain a new driver's license number without a police agency first confirming that the person's name or number is being used fraudulently. Also, Oregon law currently does not allow a person with an identification card to be issued a new number under any circumstances. As a result, citizens with a legitimate need for a new driver's license or ID card are unable to get one or are delayed in getting one. This bill replaces the narrowly defined language in statute with the authority for DMV to adopt rules defining when a new number may be issued and the documentation that a person must submit to receive a new number. This allows DMV's customers to present evidence of fraudulent use of their personal information directly to DMV, which will allow DMV to be as responsive to their needs as financial institutions, credit card companies, and the Social Security Administration. In addition, this provides the same processes for issuing a new number, whether it is on a driver's license or an ID card. This bill expands opportunities for DMV to help in curbing fraud by making it easier for citizens with a justifiable reason to obtain a new driver's license or ID card number. DMV will be able to more efficiently expose fraud to authorized users of DMV's records by showing that a particular number is no longer valid. I ask the committee to support Senate Bill 74. This bill amends current law to improve DMV's ability to serve the citizens of Oregon in the area of fraud. It gives DMV the authority to adopt rules defining when a new number or driver's license and ID cards may be issued. And this bill allows DMV to accept evidence other than a police report from citizens with a valid need for a new number on a driver's license or license or ID card. I would ask the committee to pass this bill. Thank you. I'll take questions.
Thanks, Robin. Questions?
Just about the bill that it's in conflict with. What does the other bill do, and what's the conflict?
I believe the other, Chair Gilman, Representative Boone, I believe the other bill allows us to issue replacement driver's licenses, and I don't have that in front of me, so I'm sorry I can't be more clear on that. I don't know what the conflict is. Patrick just told me about that recently. I think there are more conforming amendments than conflicting, because I do know that House bill is in basically the same chapter as this, so I'm assuming that there's just some conforming and there's not necessarily a major conflict.
Yeah. I could do a brief explanation of what a conflict amendment is. If both bills amend the same chapter number, then in some cases they'll create an amendment that will indicate how the two will mesh together, even though they amend. I think typically they amend the exact same wording in the exact same statute, but I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case. But if they both let me just pull the bill out. This one amends 807-160 and 807-400. So if that bill amended either of those, then a conflict amendment may be necessary. It doesn't mean that they juxtapose against each other. It just means that there's language. It turns out something along the lines of if both bills take effect, then something or other. Very legalese.
Thanks.
Other questions?
21-6 was the one where we had things like if you're getting a new license, you got to destroy your old one and stuff like that.
I do remember the number.
Okay.
We don't plan to work this bill today, of course. We're going to wait for the amendments and see what comes.
Okay.
Representative Thompson.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Robin, a couple places it talks about the person demonstrating proof satisfactory to the department or furnishing proof satisfactory to the department of the need for such replacement. What kind of proof do you envision that being?
Chair Gilman, Representative Hunt. I believe that what we'll do is we'll go through a rulemaking process and we will just look at evidence that they could bring to us that would show that it is being used fraudulently. And it may still include a police report under certain circumstances. I'm assuming it would be the same evidence that they are able to present to a bank. If, you know, bank statements that show that someone is withdrawing funds from their money, credit card statements that would perhaps be used for purchases that they hadn't verified, and some sort of documentation that they had provided saying that this was not our purchase. Generally speaking, I'm assuming that we will review the Social Security Administration processes, whatever processes they use. They're a similar agency that uses similar procedures, so we would probably look at those to see if we could adopt some of their procedures.
Further questions? Thanks, Robin.
Thank you.
Anyone else testify on Senate Bill 74? Public hearing on 74. And on a public hearing on Senate Bill 75.
Chair, members, Senate Bill 75 allows ODOT to select certain vehicles for verification of compliance with financial responsibility requirements. This bill has an emergency clause and would take effect upon signature by the governor.
Okay. Robin, the last one.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Robert Freeman, Oregon Department of Transportation, and I want to thank you for scheduling so many of my Senate bills this afternoon. Oregon's mandatory insurance law requires that drivers insure their vehicles. It is illegal for a person to operate a motor vehicle on Oregon highways or any premises open to the public unless the person meets Oregon's financial responsibility requirements. The law also requires that DMV have a program to verify that vehicle owners are insuring their vehicles, and the law specifies how the program should operate. It requires DMV to take random samples from all registered vehicles and to request insurance verification from the owners. DMV has developed a more efficient method of verifying insurance using the information about the insurance status of vehicles located in its automated insurance liability reporting system. The Department of Transportation is requesting Senate Bill 75 to improve program effectiveness and efficiency by repealing the language requiring the sampling of all registered vehicles and allowing DMV to use a better process. Senate Bill 75 eliminates the requirement that DMV take random samples from all motor vehicles registered in the state. Under the current process, most of the vehicles randomly selected for verification already comply with liability insurance laws. Letters are sent to these vehicle owners requesting verification of coverage. DMV then suspends the driver's licenses of vehicle owners who do not provide proof of insurance. The current sampling process is inefficient because only about 5% of the drivers are identified as uninsured. The method is unnecessarily burdensome on the rest of the public who must send in insurance verification. It is unnecessarily burdensome on DMV because all the verification supplied by the vehicle owners must then be verified with the insurer, and it is unnecessarily burdensome on the insurance industry. The new method uses the automated liability insurance reporting system at DMV. ALIR collects all of the vehicle insurance data, which must be submitted by insurance companies. The ALIR system allows DMV to better determine which vehicle owners may not have insurance because DMV has not received any insurance report. DMV will draw samples from the group of vehicles with no insurance information on file, and an issue a second letter to the owner requesting insurance verification. the process of requesting verification will not change because the ALIR system is not 100% accurate in any given time. This is due to the lag time for insurance companies reporting reporting allowed by statute when the customer is insured 15 days or loses coverage 30 days. However, we anticipate that this new method, we will better target the uninsured driving population, resulting in more drivers obtaining insurance or face license suspension. We ask the committee to support this legislation. And I'm tongue-tied today. I apologize. I can answer questions.
I just wanted to get something on the record discussion that we had. I had brought up a concern when she'd come to my office to talk to me. I had purposely taken a couple of vehicles off of insurance during a time where I wasn't using them and stored them. And I didn't want my license suspended because I didn't have insurance on those particular vehicles, but I wasn't driving them. But apparently there's a form that you'd be sending, if I'm understanding correctly, there is a form you would be sending out to these people in this pool that, you know, explain yourself, essentially, and you're signing it, basically swearing to that fact. And that's what you would use to determine.
Chair Gilman, Representative Thatcher, if you were chosen in the random sampling, we send out a card and it basically says, please provide us with insurance verification. And then there's a section that says, if you don't have insurance, explain why. And you would just be giving an explanation that you were not operating those vehicles. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're not operating your vehicle on the highways or any public area that's open to the public, then you are not required to have insurance coverage. You're exempt from that. And you sign that you're basically telling us the truth, and we do accept that. We don't follow up and verify that you have been telling us the truth.
Well, I did have one more question. While you were talking about suspending a license of an owner that did not have insurance, some vehicles are owned by a company. And what would be the penalty there? How would you suspend a driver's license?
Of a company.
Exactly.
Chair Gilman, Representative Thatcher, I'm not sure about that, how we would go about that. I believe that if you are in a vehicle and driving, that you are required to be in an insured vehicle, but I'll verify that for you.
Further questions? Yes, Representative Burley.
It was kind of along the same lines because the law requires that the vehicle be registered or insured, right? Mm-hmm. Not the driver necessarily.
Representative Gilman, Representative Burley, that's correct. It's insurance on the vehicle.
On the vehicle. So the only way through the automated liability insurance reporting system is that you're taking that vehicle and then the owner off the title, I'm presuming, and that's how you track it back to a licensed driver.
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, yes, it would be the owner that would be responsible, and I'll find out how that all ties together. But is the owner of record that is responsible for insuring the vehicle?
Okay.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure it. There's another question floating around here somewhere, but I can't. I'm kind of tang-tangled today, too. If a person has a driver's license in Oregon, but they don't own a car, they do not own a car, this person could be driving without insurance, could they not?
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, they could be driving a vehicle that is not insured, correct? Because if they don't own the vehicle, they aren't necessarily responsible.
Well, I always thought it was your insurance that goes with you. So if I'm driving your car and I have a wreck with your car, my insurance is the one that picks up the tab, not yours. And so what I'm trying to figure out is if I don't own a car and I've got my driver's license and I'm driving, I don't care whose car, you know, whose insurance is covering the accident?
Go ahead and you make the answer, and then I'll try.
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, I believe that you are responsible to drive to be in a vehicle that has insurance, but I need to follow up on that for you. I believe that you do have some responsibility to make sure that the car that you're driving is insured, whether you own it or not.
You know, if I may beg your indulgence here for a moment, and this is a little personal story too. I had a hunting accident quite a few years ago where it was associated with a vehicle, somebody else's, but I, you know, got my hand banged up on this individual's truck. And, you know, I figured medical insurance would take care of all this. And they said, this was a vehicular accident. Even though the truck was parked, it was turned off, and I just happened to have my finger stuck on something. And so my auto insurance, not his, who owned the truck, but mine, had to pay the bill for all this medical stuff. So I'm trying to figure out, who are we really trying to get at with this thing? You know, if your system is tracking a vehicle that doesn't have insurance, who are we going after?
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, the owner of the vehicle is who we're going after, because they are ultimately responsible for the vehicle.
Okay.
And I was going to try and it may muddy the water, but I can understand where a person would not have a driver's license, would not have a car. They rent a car two or three times a year. The rental company is the one that's providing the insurance. If they have to pay the additional fee.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's satisfying. Thank you.
I think this is a pretty good start in a situation where I am convinced we need to work harder on removing uninsured drivers from the road. This is the beginning. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that at least my understanding of the intent is that you would actually end up having to send out fewer of these notices than you currently do by trying to really narrow in the pool and focus on those most likely to be suspended. I noticed that in line 11, though, it eliminates the current statutory prohibition on going above 10% of the motor vehicles registered in that state. Is there a reason that piece was removed?
Chair Gilman, Representative Hunt, we're actually going to be sending out more letters of verification. We're doing more random sampling. We're doing about 22,000 annually under current statute. We've already started running test batches, and we're up closer to 24,000. So we're not actually going to be sending out less. We're going to be fairly stable, but it's turning out to be a few more, and that's because before we were sampling basically a population that we knew were insured, and now we've went from 4 million vehicles down to something like 650,000 that we're sampling from, and chances are they don't have insurance. So we're actually running this about every 2 weeks, and we'll be doing about 24,000 annually. So it's much more effective. And on the batches we've done, we've went from 5% to like 45 to 50% accuracy in capturing uninsured drivers. Owners.
Well, and because as you pointed out, it's because the population that you're drawing from has a much higher chance of those of warranting such a follow-up letter. And if I remember correctly, Robin, when you had mentioned this to me before, when you had visited with me about this, one of the reasons why you felt it was to get rid of the 10% was because of the fact this is now an automated system, in addition to the fact that you've got a more targeted population, so it's actually going to be more effective to get at these at the individuals we're looking for.
Any further questions? Good. Thank you, Robin. Anyone else testify on Senate Bill 75? Close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 675.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 75 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thatcher moves Senate Bill 75 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Mike?
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Representative
Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Drummond?
Aye.
Chair Gilman?
Aye. Motion carries. And Representative Thatcher?
Not going to thank Helena.
No,
I'm happy.
Is that okay?
Yeah,
I mean, if you don't want to carry it, that's fine.
Somebody no, I can carry it.
I really think that it needs to be talked about a little bit, just not throwing on this consent calendar. Okay?
He
did pretty darn well. Starting an hour and a half late.
Wow.
We have a meeting on Wednesday.
Not bad.
We have a meeting on Wednesday.
We have a meeting on Friday.
We have a meeting on Friday.
Would like to be excused from the meeting on Friday.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
What's Friday?
Both of you?
You should have an email in your box from me.
Well, let's talk about this a little bit. Maybe we don't need to have a meeting on Friday.
already going to be gone, too.
Representative Pat.
I've already petitioned the chief's clerk's office to be gone that day, too, so.
What is the date, Rick?
The 13th.
Not this Friday, sorry.
Ooh. Yeah, we don't want to.
I'll be here this Friday. I was mixed up on my Friday.
Mr. Chair, it's Robin's bills up again Friday, primarily.
Feel free to go ahead without me. I wasn't worried about looking at each other.
Well, I'm just, we got along through a good share of the session without Friday sessions, and this thing is starting to wind down a little bit.
We can, bill load-wise, we can handle it. I'm sure we can do it. We can handle it.
I think we'll skip Friday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now that's not every Friday. We may still pick up one, but we'll let you know if we're going to have a Friday. But for this Friday, we will not have a meeting.
Thanks.
That work? Okay. Because I'd rather have you here. I really would.
I'd rather be here too.
How could I? I mean, we just don't have enough questions without you. Meeting's adjourned.
Sorry.